Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
Silver cities rise, the morning lights, the streets that lead them, and sirens call them on with a song.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from FDR's presidential yacht in Oakland, California on the waterfront. Come along and join me for a conversation with attorney Lucia Cantor-St. Amour about her new and already best-selling book, For the Forces of Good, The Superpower of Everyday Negotiation. Lucia is a VP for UN Women. Her background includes 10 years clinical teaching positions in mediation and in negotiation and settlement at both University of California law schools at Berkeley and San Francisco. She has lectured at numerous prominent law and business schools in the United States and Europe and served for a number of years as an annual competition judge and mediator for the International Chamber of Commerce in Paris. Lucia Cantor-St. Amour.
It's asking for the taking. Come run with me now. The sky is the color of blue you've never even seen in the eyes of your lover.
Here we are in Oakland, California, and the reason that I brought you down to the waterfront is to talk about your newly released book.
I'm looking around. I have to say something about where I am because I can't help it, because we are actually aboard the USS Potomac, which was Franklin Delano Roosevelt's yacht from which he did broadcast some of his fireside chats. And Eleanor Roosevelt, although I'm told by her grandson, who's a friend of mine now, did not love being aboard the yacht. She harkens back to, of course, her avid involvement with the United Nations, and I am vice president for United Nations Women, so I'm sitting in this spot right here on the yacht where Eleanor Roosevelt perhaps sat, and so there are just some wonderful synergies to actually doing this interview with you. But getting back to the book.
The name of the book is
For the Forces of Good, The Superpower of Everyday Negotiation. And it's fun and sexy and splashy, and there's nothing else out there like it.
And this, in an indirect sense, is a culmination of more than a decade of teaching law in specializing in negotiation.
Exactly. So I've been practicing law for 25 years now, and 10 years of my 25-year law practice was teaching negotiation and mediation. My mediation experience actually goes back to 1993, so more than 25 years. Teaching negotiation and mediation at two University of California law schools.
Was this your choice, or was it Berkeley that wanted you to go there?
I was asked to join at the UC Hastings by the Center for Negotiation and Dispute Resolution. It was a brand new department back in 2003 or maybe 2002.
So at that point in time in Lucia's life, where were you in your evolution in negotiating skills?
So I would say I was above average. The Anita Christine Knowlton, who started the Center for Negotiation and Dispute Resolution, she was a mentor of mine. And in fact, she's one of the reasons, she and my other main woman mentor for law anyway, Barbara Shivani, they are the reasons I went to law school at all.
Oh, wow.
They were women mediators and arbitrators in a labor arbitration field where women were very scarce. They were pioneers. And I worked for them before law school at a time when I actually had a offer. I was out of college. I was done at UC Berkeley. I had my degree. And I had an offer from a big law firm for a salaried job with full benefits. And then I had this offer from Barbara and Chris to come and work 20 hours a week for them at their arbitration practice and no benefits to start. I said, well, told my parents, I said, I'm going to take that job. And they said, what are you doing? Why would you take that job when we had this great offer from this big firm and the benefits and I write about this in my book. It's chapter 6 on interoception in negotiation, and it means trusting your instincts. And I said, I can't quite articulate it. I just think that's the right thing to do. I'm going to be brought along there. This is somehow an opportunity. And so I followed my instincts and I went to work for them. And then I went to law school because of them, because I had that mentorship and those role models. And then years later, 2003, here's Chris Knowlton starting up the center and she says, come teach.
Interesting. Let me interject an extremely naive question looking in from the outside. It would seem to me that being an expert at negotiating skills would be 1A, prima facie important to being a good lawyer.
Right. So people think that good lawyers are good talkers and they're good arguers. And there was always a module we would do at the law school that was just on listening, a whole 3-hour class just on listening. And at the beginning of every one of those classes, I would say, how many students in the room here were told when they were a kid that you would make a good lawyer because you're a good arguer? In 10 years, 2 law schools, lots of hands would shoot in the air. And then I would say, okay, how many of you were told you would make a good lawyer someday because you were a good listener? And how many hands do you think in 10 years went in the air, Tom?
Not many.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero. So when you say it's important for being an attorney, yes, but maybe not for the reason that you're thinking. You might be thinking because you need to make an argument and you need to be persuasive. Persuasion is a part of negotiation. Mm-hmm. It is not all negotiation. I would say listening is probably the number one most important skill in negotiation.
Okay, after number one skill, doesn't the art of compromise come into play there?
So a lot of people like to say, well, negotiation is compromise.
Exactly, but...
Okay, maybe, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and in the sense that when you go into a negotiation, if you've planned for it, you should always plan for it if you can, you want to have some concessions that you're ready to make. You need to be able to start with a high, specific, justifiable goal and then be able to back down from that, because people like to feel that something was a hard won. So you need to be ready to give something up. So part of negotiating and planning for it is making a concession plan. And part of your concession plan is actually having some decoy concessions. So
exactly.
Some false concessions.
A giveaway, yeah.
Right, that doesn't really matter to you, but the other side doesn't know that it doesn't matter
so
to you.
So there's that gesture of giving or compromise.
Exactly, and then it triggers reciprocity. So you've now conceded something, and you're more likely to get a concession from them. So when you say it's about compromise, just like persuasion, I would say compromise is a part of negotiation.
Right.
That is absolutely not the full story of negotiation. Mm-hmm. And it can't be reduced to just compromise. That is overly simplistic.
So let's continue on with your book, Table of Contents, The Flow. What are you...
Right.
What's the process of you're trying to teach me or us?
For everybody.
Yeah.
Because negotiation is everywhere, every day, and it is for everyone. And I don't think that is widely enough understood.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really sought out to write a book. I didn't really want to have to sustain a point for that long, quite frankly. And my dad is the one who was saying, you really need to write a book. And I said, oh, please, Dad, I'm not going to write a book. We have too many books. And I say that. I love books. I'm one of those people that thinks the characters in books are my friends. And I'm a reader. I said, we just have so much content out there, Dad. I don't need to add to the noise. Well, I said this in January of this year. And in February of this year, I launched my podcast. And in so doing, I grabbed that teaching binder from those 10 years of teaching negotiation from 2003 to 2013.
So you were teaching yourself, in a sense, by looking back?
I was planning. I was thinking, how do I want to structure this podcast? I want it to be a teaching podcast that really empowers people so that everyday people, especially women, can start to think of themselves as confident and competent negotiators. Right. Going through my binder, it's a paper binder of all my stuff, trying to build my podcast, and I made a discovery, and I'm going to pause right there because you're about to ask me.
You know, we've had many conversations going back in time, and an epiphanous, eye-opening moment for me, I came in thinking about the subject very naively, thinking that it was gender neutral. And, you know, maybe it's because my wife is, I got to introduce you to her because she's a great negotiator. She has no problems with that. And yet, take it from there because it's very different than what I thought.
I never really thought about it either way, because when you think you are able to do something, and I've said this many times and I stick by it, I am a girl from a small town in Illinois and that's it. I am nobody. I am nobody special. So if I can do something, if I am good at something, well, everyone must be able to do that. So it never really occurred to me. But what happened when I was flipping through that big binder for materials for my podcast is only in 2022 did I make this realization, Tom. Oh, wow. Every single assigned reading for 10 years at two prestigious law schools had been authored by not just a man, a white man. And it just stopped me dead in my tracks. And I said, how is that possible? And how did I never notice it before? And then I thought, well, okay, let's just go back in time. And let's look at what women, or I should say non-men, authors I could have been assigning. There's no one, Tom. So we had one book out of Princeton University Press in 2003 called Women Don't Ask, more of a sociology book, not a negotiation book. Then we didn't really have anything until 2015 when we had two more. We had one in 2020. We had one at the beginning of 2022. That is it. I'm number six.
Wow.
Now let me hasten to add, I would love to be wrong about this. So if you're out there and you're listening to this, please prove me wrong, because when I'm wrong, it means I get to learn something new. But the parameters are, I am not talking about a book on conflict. I am not talking about a book on communication or a book on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. We have lots of women authors on those topics, not negotiations. So when I made that realization and then my father's words were echoing in my head, you should write a book. And then I said, well, now I have to write a book. Like, it was like I was being called up. Now I have to write a book. And I sat down and I wrote that book. And here's the kicker. I needed to write a book. The other thing I realized about these other authors, and they're quite good, right? I mean, I signed them, right? Is they're written in this elite way by attorneys and MBAs and C-suite executives and retired hostage negotiators for MBAs and attorneys and sales and marketing professionals. They're not written for the nurse, the professional dog walker, the college student, the single parent working two jobs. So I said, we've got to not only have a new perspective, a new voice here, we need to take this out of the strictly business context and bring it to everyday people, because negotiation is, say it with me, everywhere. Every day for everyone.
Give us some examples, some of the most epiphanous things that you encountered that are struggles or that you wouldn't think so looking in from the outside.
Oh, just asking for something. So I guess I just take for granted how I just ask a lot of questions. And I don't really see that many obstacles. And this is something in the very beginning of the book where I say, just as a little homework exercise, next time you're at a brick and mortar store and you're checking out, say, are there any other discounts or offers that apply to my purchase today? Well, you'd be surprised at how often the answer to that is yes. And if the answer is no, well, you're in no worse position. You're going to buy this stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. But I have met particularly too many women in the past 5 years alone, more than that, but particularly the past 5 years, it seems, they don't even know how to ask for something, Tom. And then when I say, well, why don't you ask or why don't you do? And they'll say, oh, I can do that? I'm allowed to do that? And I say, well, yes, you're allowed. What do you think is going to happen if you ask? Are you going to dissolve in like brown sugar, like the Wicked Witch? What would happen if you ask? And there's a whole chapter on that too, because I am a mediator, on what would happen. These magic mediator phrases that mediators use, like imagine if or what would happen, that actually kind of loosens up your brain to think in a whole new way.
Where it doesn't wind up being intimidating or threatening.
Right, or where you're not going to necessarily lose any face, or what have you got to lose? Just try it. It's like a muscle. The more you practice it, the stronger it gets. But if you're sitting on the sofa drinking a beer while you watch the workout video, you're not developing those muscles.
What you were alluding to, part of it is just that social conditioning of the female from childhood growing up.
Right.
To train to please, right?
Train to please, be cooperative, be nice, be agreeable, be helpful, pay it forward. And you've heard me, this is a reframe for me. I say, I absolutely agree, because I am a philanthropist among many other things and have many other endeavors that you know about, but you don't need to overpay it forward. And women in particular overpay it forward. And when they are told they're not good enough or it's not good enough, they just keep trying harder. Well, I'm just going to do more for you, even though you're not treating me very well. I'll just do more.
And that's like innate social conditioning, isn't it?
It is. And I guess, Tom, I am surprised by it. I didn't think so. Now I'm the one who feels sort of naive that I am making these new discoveries that, hold on, the status of women and their place in organizations and their power and their agency still has a long way to go. And just everyday negotiation is a big part of that.
So ABCs of teaching evolution in that brain function. How do you teach the process of evolving, of how to become?
See, that's where I think the book takes you by the hand and it takes you on that journey. And it's like with the ingredients, and I'm going, well, here are the eggs and here's the sugar and here's the flour. We're going to mix it up now. And now here's how you layer the cake, because it starts off.
Hang on a sec. Are they rebuilding Oakland out there?
I think so. I think we've gone through the looking glass. This is what I think is actually particularly thrilling about the book, is that the novice who doesn't think of themselves as a negotiator is going to get so much out of this. Even the so-called expert, that C-suite executive, they're going to get something out of this book. Because I start really basic, and I'm kind of warming you up. And I start the same place I started all the law students, which was arm wrestling for chocolates. Which we literally did. And there were so many basic negotiation themes and lessons that we got from the chocolate negotiations on the very first day of class. And then we go from there, and then we head into rapport building. And I talk about the tit for tat robot and Robert Axelrod and the evolution of cooperation. And then I go into planning. Here's how you plan. And by chapter three, we might have a sort of a C-suite executive going, yeah, I already know all this stuff. They probably don't know about the tit for tat robot. I already know all this stuff. Yeah, okay, keep reading. You just keep reading, because there are going to be some nuggets in this book, because it builds. It's like a slow burn, and at a certain point, you're going to start experiencing emotions, and it's going to be an array of emotions. And by the end of the book, you will have laughed, and you will have become angry because of the chapter on negotiating with bullies, which, side note, no other negotiation book has. I wonder why. I'll let people fill in that blank on their own. And then by the last chapter, you'll probably be in tears.
And again, in a perfect world, in your best vision, who is going to buy the book and who is going to respond to it and apply it? best?
So I love that question, because when I was shopping this with agents and publishers, and you know the story of how I got that offer and actually rejected it because I said, that's not really how I want to do this, they kept asking me the same question over and over. They would say, well, because a lot of the agents didn't really get it because it wasn't a business book and it wasn't a law book. And they said, but Lucia, which section of the bookstore would it be in? And my answer was always the same. It wouldn't be in a section. It would be featured on the front table.
Face out by the front door.
Right. Because it is the C-suite executive, because it is applicable to business. And it is the single parent working the two jobs who might want to figure out how to better negotiate or better be confident just in the workplace or just in their own relationships with their family, quite frankly. It is the college student. It is the high school student. It is anyone who has a curious mind and who genuinely wants to learn something about negotiating. And I'm going to warn you about one thing. These other negotiation books, other than the other five that I mentioned, and by the way, all of those women are referenced in my book, every single one of them I make sure to mention, and the non-women as well. Those other books are very male voice. And I never questioned that. It never even really occurred to me. I just accepted it. So it really shows how insidious it is, the gender bias, that even I didn't notice how male-voiced they were. My book is decidedly female-voiced, and you pick up on it in the preface right away, because that's my voice. I'm female. I'm very female. And Tom, just watch how my book will get criticized for that.
You think so?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Wow.
That's okay.
It might just propel it to the top 10 list.
Well, you know what happened was, so I wrote the book. And then because I am a woman, you know, I have to doubt myself. So I said, well, gosh, I wrote it, but I mean, is it even any good or is it just junk? So I ran it by that same mentor who recruited me to teach, because she's retired now. She's living in New York. And she's someone who I used to ghostwrite arbitration decisions for. And she, let's just say, she doesn't pump sunshine up your skirt. So she's a tough critic. And I knew that by sending it to her, she would really tell me how it was. And she's also read all this. She's an expert in the field. So I sent it to her. And I said, you got to really be honest. And she read it. She said, Lucia, it's fantastic. There's nothing like it on the market. And I was like, I thought so. I thought so.
So then,
here's what I did next. You're going to love this part. So then I sent a message to Robert Cialdini. And if you don't know that name, just Google it, Cialdini. He is considered the godfather of persuasion. And I assigned his book, it's called Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. That's one of them. He's written others. I assigned Influence for all 10 years at both those law schools. So I wrote to him. I said, hi, Bob. You know, I assigned your book for 10 years at two University of California law schools. And I just made a realization this year. I'd love to share it with you. Do you want to talk to me? And I knew he had to say yes. So I mean, he wants to know what did you figure out? You're so curious. What is it? I have to know. And so he said, sure. And we got on a Zoom call and I told him about it. And I told him about, do you realize there aren't enough women? And do you realize, and there's a chapter on boys, and I have these everyday super tip text boxes that I call out, you know, in the book, and they're all over these super tip. And he said, and he was nodding, and he loved it. He loved the inclusiveness of it. He said, we need more women authors. And he said, yep, the negotiating with bullies. He said, Lucia, send me the manuscript. And this was a first draft. I said, okay, it's a first draft. He said, send me the manuscript.
How cool.
I sent it to him, Tom. And 2 weeks later, I got an email, Lucia, I'm endorsing your book. And he had written his endorsement, and he gave it to me. And at that point, I said, well, I'm the dog who just caught her tail.
Yeah.
Now I have to make it happen. And I did. I did make it happen.
How long did it take you?
Okay, you really want me to answer that?
Yeah, but you've been working on it for 20 years, right?
Well, so, okay, 4 days. I wrote it in 4 days, but I wrote it in 4 days and 25 years.
Exactly.
Right, because it's all that experience that led up to it and all those old teaching materials. You know, I had certainly written articles and blogs, and so my poor husband just lost me for 4 days. He would roll over in bed, and I was gone. He would work all day, and there was no dinner. So he then had to make dinner. I was just not available. I heard that Sylvester Stallone wrote the script for Rocky in 4 days.
Oh, really?
Yep. Mm-hmm. You could Google it. I think that's a fact. And so here we are today, and I got to decide the title, and I got to decide the art on the front. And
I love the cover.
The cover, because the cover is... Right? Well, what happened is, I got this wonderful designer out of New York, a book designer out of New York, Aja Blue. So wonderful. And I said, Aja, we need to figure out a way to feature a chocolate Labrador on this book cover. And I said, but we also have to put the Cialdini endorsement right on the front cover. So she's working with it, and she came up with this idea, and she said, you know, Lucia, it just gets really busy putting that chocolate lab. I said, here's what you do. Because she had this wonderful red cape thing, and the woman is facing the other direction. I said, here's what you do, Aja. I said, you put a to-go coffee cup in her right hand. You put a leash in her left hand. You wrap the leash around the spine, and you put that chocolate lab on the back.
There you go.
And then people, they're going to flip over that. Where's that leash going? You flip it over, right? So that's how we got that chocolate. Because it's the everyday aspect, right? Yep. It's the superpower, so that's the cape. But it's the everyday. She's on the move. She's got her to-go coffee. She's walking the dog. She's doing it. She's making it happen. Mm-hmm. She's the everyday negotiator, and it's her superpower.
And the name of the book is?
For the Forces of Good, the Superpower of Everyday Negotiation. And you should be able to find it on Amazon. And it was also picked up by the Library Journal for their Biblio board. So if you can't afford the book, I mean, books are expensive. If you can afford the book, buy the book. If you can't afford the book, you can get it on Biblio board. And that, what I love about that is that it augments its inclusiveness and accessibility. If you can't afford the book, I had a woman tell me, she found out about the book. She wrote to me, Lucia, when I get my next paycheck next week, I'm buying your book. Someone like that who's waiting for their next paycheck to buy a $20 book shouldn't have to buy the book. They should be able to get it from the library. And so you can on Biblio board.
I love it. To learn more about Lucia's world, where would you direct somebody?
Well, you can go on my website. I'm on LinkedIn. You can go on my website, pactumfactum.com.
Do you remember that's how we met?
We met on LinkedIn, but I don't remember how. I don't remember who connected with whom, and now we're just old friends.
Yeah, I can't remember either.
I can't remember either, and it doesn't matter because now you're stuck with me. I do want to say that Pactum Factum, which is my law practice, and that's my brand, it does mean a done deal in Latin. So if you can't figure out how to spell it, just look up a done deal in Latin, and that's pactumfactum.com.
And your full name?
Lucia Cantor St. Amour.
Awesome. And I'm Tom Wilmer. We've been visiting in Oakland, California, right on the waterfront, where they're building something.
Some sort of city of Atlantis, I think.
Yeah.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Attend their jubilee and see them spend their last two bits for Nonna Rich.